Hi, this is Kale. I want to remind you that this episode has spoilers for Jeffrey Brown's Clumsy. Enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Matt and Kale Read Comics. Every episode, Kale and I discuss a different graphic novel. This episode, we are talking about Clumsy, an autobiographical comic by Jeffrey Brown, originally published in 2002. Kale, I'm very excited. How are you doing today, Kale?
I'm doing great.
Good to hear it, man. My name is Matt Smith. I am a cartoonist, comics educator, podcaster, and filmmaker, currently living outside of Glasgow in Scotland.
Hi, and I'm Kale Wierke. I'm a longtime mainstream comic book fan, cosplayer, collector, and former filmmaker.
Kale, I'm very excited. We have a very special guest on the podcast today, the oft-mentioned first-time guest and also first-time listener, my wife, Emma Smith. Emma, hi. Welcome to Matt and Kale Read Comics.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, to be clear, you have never listened to the show before.
No, I've never listened to the show before.
No, I think I mentioned this, Kale, on our Day Tripper episode with John Lees, but Emma, would you like to explain your grand plan for these hours of recording that Kale and I are doing?
Well, okay. Well, can I just say that I haven't listened to the show because I do listen to you talk about comics a lot and just in general daily life. And so I just don't feel like I can spend my leisure time listening to more stuff about comics. So that's just in my defense. But I think that it'll be really nice to have all these recordings. If you die suddenly and like unexpectedly, and then I'll have all these recordings of your voice that I'll be able to listen to, and it's just like new stuff that you've never said before. So I'm just saving it for that, for your untimely death.
Yes, that's your plan, your master plan.
That's the plan, yeah.
But like I said, I think I've mentioned you almost once in every episode, which will be a nice surprise.
That's really nice.
After my untimely death, will you mention, hear all the nice things I've heard?
That might bring a tear to my eye.
Yes. But also, Emma, you are my biggest supporter in my comics career. You're my muse. You're also the main character of my autobiographical Smith vs. Smith series. You are the star, the main character of my graphic novel, You're Stuck With Me Now, which is the true story of how we met while we were both teaching in Kuwait. We met through community theater. We started dating. We ended up moving in together fairly quickly. I always said I would never date a girl with cats, but now I'm living in Scotland with two cats.
No, you love the cats.
I love the cats. Mm-hmm. You're also the main character of a collection of Smith vs. Smith comics called There's Plenty of Emmas in the World, which is based on something your mother said.
Yep.
So anyone listening, if you are enjoying Emma and want more Emma content, and also, you know, this is a autobiographical romance comic we're talking about today, Clumsy. If you want any more content, go to smithvssmith.com/store. Check out my graphic novel, You're Stuck With Me Now. Check out the collection of short comics, There's Plenty of Emmas in the World. I think you'll really like them, especially if you really like this book. Like I said, this is an autobiographical story by Jeffrey Brown. It's the story of a long-distance relationship, the ups and downs, and he was really trying to show the realities of a relationship. There's a documentary about Jeffrey Brown's comics called Drawing Between the Lines, and he kind of explains his approach to creating comics, and he really wants to show that relationships aren't necessarily all good or all bad. They're not fairy tale stories, but they're also not, you know, in movies, he says he typically sees either fairy tale romance or kind of abusive relationships, but relationships are ups and downs, and they are, you know, good times and bad times. And it's really about these small moments, these little moments. And that's really what this book is. It's just kind of a collection of small moments. Emma, can you share your first time reading this book?
Yes. So we were on a weekend away in Bahrain, which I think we hadn't been going out with each other for very long. I think
it was one of our first times away together.
One of our first times away together. And I must have run out of reading materials. And so you gave me Clumsy to read. And before I read that, I didn't actually know that comics were anything other than superheroes. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize that indie comics even existed. And I didn't realize that people could write autobiographical comics. And this was just like a brand new thing for me to read. And so I read it by the pool when we were away, and you were loving it. You were like, oh my God, this new girl that I'm seeing is like loving these comics.
Well, I mean, this whole book is about previous relationships, and my last long-term relationship before that, she refused to ever read comics.
Aw, boo.
So I was very excited. And
she was the worst.
I also, Kayla and I have talked about this. Like, you try to find a comic that fits the reader. And, you know, there's every type of story you can tell or read, you could find that in comics. So, you know, not everyone is a fan of superheroes. So I didn't think that would be a good place to introduce you to comics. So I wanted to find one. Of course, we're assuming anyone who's read this or is listening to us right now has read the book. But partway through the book, do you remember what I said to you while you were really enjoying it? Like, we'd gone upstairs. I think we're getting ready to go to dinner and you're still reading. And I was like, oh, my gosh, he's loving it.
Yeah, you told me that the girl in the book wasn't Jeffrey Brown's current wife, and really devastated me that you told me that they were going to split up and that the relationship hadn't worked out in the end.
Yeah, I think I said, like, did you get to the breakup yet? And you were like, what?
Yeah, no, you were like, well, it's not his wife. So I think I might have cried slightly.
You did cry.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, really.
Yeah. So, sorry for that, but you still enjoyed it. And I think you actually read all of his other autobiographical books as well.
I did after that, yeah.
We can talk about later, yeah.
Yeah, I really didn't want it to end because I liked all the wee cute stories. You know, and I think because we had just started going out, we're at the start of a relationship, it was just reminding me of us a little bit. Not the neediness and the insecurity and stuff. Like, I don't think that we had that, but it just the cute little everyday moments. I did really like that. And I had never really even watched films or read anything that was just slice of life like that. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of slice of life. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the type of stories that I prefer to tell. It's the type of stories that I try to seek out and the ones that I enjoy the most. Kale, is this your first time reading Clumsy?
Yeah, it was. I read it in, like, basically a marathon session since, like, maybe last night. And, it was really good. I gotta be honest, though. Like, for me, art is a very important part of the whole presentation of a comic. And initially, I had my reservations about it. But, like, eventually, the story itself won me over, over the art. So I want to thank you for the suggestion that we actually read this book.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to change my entire approach. I was ready to go on the defensive because I've been trying to get you to read, you know, expand your reading horizons, Kale, for a while. I mean, I know you're a big mainstream comic book superhero fan, but I like anything that's in a comic. Like, I used to go to the comic book stores when I was living in Canada, and I would get, like, one superhero book and then one indie book, and, like, something that's really different. This is published by Top Shelf Fantagraphics, Drawn and Quarterly. I really love the kind of material that they put out. So even when I was going and picking up a superhero book in one hand, I would also try to find, another indie, other kind of story, a non-superhero book in the other hand. And I've tried to get you to read some of these that I've really enjoyed, and do you remember, Kale, like, what your opinion on indie books used to be?
Yeah, they were basically something that wouldn't be too interesting to me at all, just because they're so slow and they don't have pretty pictures. So,
I always remember, Kale, you were like, oh, it's always just some sad boy talking about his ex-girlfriend. And this book is really
exactly
the best in that sad boy talking about his ex-girlfriend genre. So I was really coming in today prepared to have to stand up and defend this book. But I'm glad that I think it's interesting that the story kind of won you over and, you know, kind of you stopped paying attention so much to the very rough art. Because hopefully, again, like we said, everyone's at least looked at this book, but the art is very, very raw. He drew this in a sketchbook, just with, like, a ballpoint pen. There's mistakes, there's scribbles. I love, there's even, it's broken up into different kind of sequences. Some are just one page, some are two pages, some, I think the longest is maybe six pages, but each one of these sequences has kind of its own chapter heading. I don't know about you, Kale, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Calvin and Hobbes when I was a kid, that, you know, it's all these little mini stories that kind of add up to this kind of larger narrative. So it feels kind of like that, with little moments that all kind of add up and create this kind of mosaic of this relationship. But he scratches out the titles sometimes and just has this black bar of like lines drawn out and decided, no, I'm changing the title of the sequence. There's one or two moments where he crosses things out in the speech balloons. One of my favorite pages that I show quite a lot in my presentations to schools is, I think the sequence is called Weird, and he's lying in bed talking to her on the phone, and he says, "I'm sorry for being weird." And she goes, "Oh, it's okay, I like weird." And it's just this little moment, six panels, but he's lying there. It's all the same perspective, this overhead shot, and he draws himself with one hand holding the phone, one hand resting on his chest, but the number of fingers on his hand changes from panel to panel. I don't know if either of you noticed that. It goes from five, and sometimes it's three, and then it's kind of almost this lobster claw, two claw fingers instead of just, he's not even taking the time to slow down and count how many fingers he's drawing. It's just, it's so immediate.
It definitely feels like he didn't intend for an audience. It feels like you're reading his diary. And I don't know if that's how, if it was just a therapy for him to write it initially, and then he just shoved it all together in a collection and then it got really famous. But yeah, you definitely don't feel like he's made any effort with the presentation. But yeah. I like that. It's very innocent and childlike, kind of like what he was like in the relationship.
It's very pure. It's very, like I said, immediate. But you're totally right. He's in this documentary, Reading Between the Lines, he says that he was trying to recapture the fun he had as drawing as a child. He's really not second-guessing himself. Like I said, he was drawing in a sketchbook. The reason the book is 230-something pages long is because that's how long his sketchbook was. And you're exactly right that it wasn't initially intended so much for a wider audience. He was doing it as an art project, and his original initial idea was just to have this sketchbook be the art project, the actual artifact. So instead of like a painting on a wall, he would display this one sketchbook. Sent it out to publishers. No one was interested. So he self-published and printed 2,000 copies, and then Top Shelf decided, even though they passed on originally publishing it, they decided to distribute it for him. When he started placing the ads in Diamond and started taking orders, he realized he needed way more than what he had. So then Top Shelf took him on board and actually published. So you're right. It was initially just this very personal thing. It is very therapeutic. Kale, how would you describe this book to someone who hasn't read it? You know, the art style, but also the tone and the structure of it.
I would say it's kind of rough. Kind of like a, you know, it's kind of like an imperfect relationship, but, that's why I was going to ask you, are the rest of his books kind of like this as well?
Yeah. So this is his first book, and then he went on to, he did a couple more in this very similar sort of style of these little moments that add up to be a larger story, which he called his girlfriend trilogy. So, I think the second one was Unlikely, which is the story of how he lost his virginity. So it was chronologically takes place before anything we see in this book. And then he also did AEIOU or Any Easy Intimacy. And then he had like what he kind of calls his epilogue, Every Girl is the End of the World for Me. All of those, you can see his style evolve, but it is still very much that sort of sketchbook, ballpoint pen, very rough, very messy stuff. Would you say that's accurate with the others in that sort of trilogy?
I can't quite remember, but I think I remember thinking that his art got better every time.
Incrementally for those ones. But listeners might know him from his Star Wars books. Yeah, Vader and Son and the follow-ups and the Jedi Academy series. So when I visit schools, I like to show those books as kind of, this is what the work he's doing now. It's much more refined.
Very polished.
Much more polished. He adds color. I think his most recent autobiographical book is A Matter of Life and Death. And that is much more polished. It looks much more like the stuff he does for Jedi Academy. So he's definitely evolved. What I like is just seeing that evolution. And even in this book, if you look at like the first couple pages, the art is even rougher than the rest of the book. The first night he spends with Teresa, it's even more sketchy and rough. And I like that you see him kind of evolve as the book continues. Art Spiegelman, creator of Mouse, talks about how by the time you finish a book, you know, the art is so much better than the first half. And then you want to go back and redraw the first half, but then that first half will be better than what the second half is. And he says you could just endlessly keep creating and fixing and touching it up. But you just have to let it be. But I like that comics are kind of, you know, they show their own evolution within the pages. I'm friendly with Paul Chadwick, creator of Concrete. And the last time I visited him, he was working on a comic and he was drawing the pages backwards. And I asked him why he was doing that. And he said, well, you kind of learn a character the more you draw them. And the last page I draw, if that's the first page, that's the first time you see the character. And I want that to be the best version, the best way this character looks. So that's why he draws backwards, because he knows that he's going to improve and refine the character. And he wants that first time you open the book, that to be the best version of that drawing of that character.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a story of, it's a bittersweet story of a year-long, long-distance relationship. Little snippets of life, really purposely kind of a messy style. Kale, I mean, it's made up of all these little moments. Are there any moments that kind of stuck out at you, jumped out at you, that were either really relatable or that you really gravitated to or really stuck in your mind?
Well, can I say that this whole book was very relatable to me, because I've done two long distance relationships in my time. And one was uber long distance, like somebody moved to Edmonton and, you know, I had to fly over there. It was super, everything was so relatable. And like, I like the fact that he talked about, you know, that excitement you go through when you're doing long distance relationships, because when you see each other after so long, after speaking on the phone or, you know, over Skype or whatever it is, and texting, and then you see a person, you know, there, you know, in person, and then you just, I don't know, it's more exciting because it's like, oh my God, all this like pent up like feeling is like coming out. We're going to go have fun. We're going to, you know, obviously hook up, and you know, like it's gonna, you know, you're just gonna have a great time together. And so I like that he highlighted that in this book. And yeah, it's this kind of delicate dance when you're doing long distance relationships, where you're just kind of when you're not together, it seems almost like you're disconnected, but you're really trying to keep the relationship going. And then when you see each other, it's just like this euphoria of feeling, because you're like, oh my God, you know, like this person is like in front of me now. So I like that he captured that in this story.
Aww. Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of talking on the phone. And we see, I don't think we ever switch to her perspective. So it does stay in the room with him wherever he is. And we hear her voice over the phone in kind of an electrified speech balloon. But we never actually see her on the other end. And there's these moments that I really connected with. I don't know, like I've spent a lot of time on the road with my work. Not recently, obviously, you've been locked in a house with me during lockdown for the last year plus. But when I was traveling a lot, you know, the scenes where he's talking to her on the phone, he goes, okay, I wish I was there to give you kisses on your tummy there. Mwah, 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 four kisses for your tummy. And she goes, oh, thank you. I'm going to kiss your neck. Mwah, mwah, mwah. I mean, I connected to that sort of stuff, and then meetups in airports and being reunited. That reminded me of our relationship just when I was traveling for work so much.
Yep.
But then, like, near the end when things are kind of falling apart, the again, so much drama played through over the phone. There's that scene where he calls her house and is it her mom? Her friend says...
Her mom says, Tom's on the phone.
Tom's on the phone. And then you hear the voice go, oh, I mean, Jeff. And that was just like a dagger in the heart. And again, just... It's because of that distance, it's because of that disconnect, because it is through the phone, because someone else is involved. That just, I think, made it sting even more. And even the end is done over the phone. And I mean, I've also had long distance relationships, and it's always just like, how much money do I want to spend to fly this person over? And I know we're going to break up. And or do I want to spend money to fly to see them just to break up? Like, aren't we both just going to save time and money and hassle and break up on the phone? One time, a long distance relationship, the girl actually kind of tricked me into calling the relationship off. We were texting and she said something like, I can't do this right now. And I said, okay, fine. You know, I guess that's it then. And then the next day we were talking and she was like, well, you broke up with me yesterday. And I was like, I did what? And she said, well, you said, you know, that's fine. I said, well, you said you can't do this. And she said, well, I meant I can't talk right now, but it seems like that's what you really want if you think that we broke up. And so I had to dump myself over a long distance relationship.
Aww.
Yeah. Do you have any tales of woe to join in, Emma? Or are you just...
Well, no, I've never had a long distance relationship. But I... One thing that I did think about when I was reading it was that I had never actually read books from a young man's perspective before. Like, I've read a lot of books, you know, written by women, and probably the only books that I've read that were written by men were probably murder mystery type things like that, where you don't actually get to, you know, feel the inner life of, of, you know, the author. And so like, that was really illuminating to me that actually men had the same feelings as women at the start of a relationship and then at the end of a relationship. And I don't know what I thought before, but I just with him being so raw and so, you know, emotional in it, mm-hmm. I just sort of got a more rounded idea of men, especially young men, and thought I'd probably misjudged them a little bit maybe in the past. Mm-hmm. So that was just like one thing that I noticed.
Yeah, I think I like this story because, number one, I really feel like we're really connecting with this character. And that's one thing that I just love about comics is, and I think autobiographical comics are just so powerful. It, like, you go on this emotional journey with him and you really get inside this guy's head in a way that I think it's hard to do in other mediums. And because he's the writer, he's the artist, and he's just really just like, you know, bleeding on the page. Like, we really, really are on this journey with him. And I think I like the story because it does kind of show a different side to masculinity, and it is kind of a, you know, it stands up, or not stands up, but it does present a different view than toxic masculinity. Yeah, which,
and it's really brave of him to be that honest and to put that out there for the whole public to see.
For sure. And I mean, especially in comics, like Emma, you said yourself, you thought comics were kind of just superhero stuff. Yeah. And I'm not saying all superhero comics, but like, the badly written ones are just these kind of adolescent male fantasies of power. And I love that this is not only introducing readers to a different style of comic, but also a different version of masculinity.
Yep, definitely.
Yes, this is someone talking about their own world and their own experiences, but it's impossible really to tell your story without including other people in your orbit. And Emma, as someone who is the star of my autobiographical comic series, I mean, how did you feel? Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, definitely had a lot of thoughts about that. I mean, I love how honest and raw Jeffrey Brown is in it. And I think that's the thing that makes me connect with him the most. And that's why I really loved it, because it was just total pure honesty. I think if he was trying to sanitize it, I wouldn't have liked it as much. I would have found it boring, and I would have mm-hmm. found the stories just like insipid. But it was the rawness that really gets to you. But I wouldn't have wanted to be the woman in that comic. Like, I'm the woman in your comics, and you always check with me to see if I'm happy with what you're writing about me and how you're making me look and stuff, which you did used to always make me look angry, which used to bother me. But
I always get you to check. And that was, you know, my line of thought was that, you know, the comedy and the drama comes from the conflict. And
yeah, but you always made me the villain. Anyway, but I just think if I was the ex-girlfriend that he was writing about, I really wouldn't want that much information out there about me. For example, I wrote down the vaginal foam contraception. Yeah. I really wouldn't want anyone to know that about what kind of contraception that I had used. And you know, just how he draws her, and he draws himself like really awful as well. Like, he's really not flattering. And I mean, just like the amount of pubic hair that he draws on both of them is just ridiculous. And I just wouldn't want my image like depicted like that. And I'm imagining he's changed her name. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, I think it's a different name because I couldn't figure out where it was, but I know I've read it in one of his other short story collections where he's contacted by an ex-girlfriend and says, "Hi, I hope I have the right Jeffrey Brown. I think I'm the girl from Clumsy." So she wasn't entirely sure it was her, which leads me to believe that he did change the name.
Yep.
So he does, there's an epilogue story where he meets up with her again after publishing, I think, at least Clumsy, if not the other girlfriend stories. And they do hook up, but then it just kind of fizzles out and doesn't really go anywhere.
I don't know if I would have hooked up with him after putting me in that book, to be honest. Like, I don't know. It's just too much information. And I think, like, God, you know, her parents, no, she went out with a guy called Jeffrey Brown. They could easily read that, you know, that I would really be embarrassed, you know, just with how honest he was about everything. I wouldn't like to that level of detail about me just being out there in the world.
It is, as an autobiographical cartoonist, it is a weird balance because you want it to be honest and truthful more mm-hmm. than anything. But you don't want to give away any details that you wouldn't. Like, yeah, I mean, thinking of the girl's or your wife's parents is a good kind of barometer of how much would they want to know. And now,
but then if he had written it like that, I wouldn't have liked it as much, probably.
He does say again in that documentary that he really can't think about the fact that people will read this because uh-huh. that might affect how he does read it, or sorry, how he does write it. So he does just kind of put it all out there, and then not even, he's not filtering himself and doesn't think about it. But yeah, Kale, were there any moments that you thought he was giving us too much information?
Yeah, but I think it's also supposed to be that way for the content itself, because it's supposed to be an intimate kind of story. And also, I found that because he was being so so specific about things, I found it super relatable to mm-hmm. my experiences as well. Like, I understand, though, obviously he should have asked permission from the girl before he started writing about her. But it's because of, you know, like, I think that a lot of kind of moments that you have together are just, you know, they're special, they're intimate, and they're, you know, it shouldn't be shared with everyone, and makes it less special. So, yeah, I found that that was kind of weird. But, you know, I understand that why he did it. And I think that if he wasn't so raw about it, it wouldn't be as relatable to me as a reader.
Yeah. I think part of it is the age. I mean, I think he's college age, so early to mid-20s when he's putting this out. So, yeah. Like, you don't think as much about long-term stuff. And also you have this sort of, you know, I definitely know, you know, there's things that you want to kind of hold back a little bit as you get a bit older, thinking about, you know, your wider audience and how this might stick with you for longer than you might intend. But you're right, Kale, like, the specificity makes it more universal. Like, that's an old writing idiom. You know, the more specific it is, the more universal it is, the more relatable, you know, mm-hmm. these exact moments don't happen to you, but something like this has happened to you. It's interesting that you said, you know, sharing it makes it less special to you, because I kind of approach autobiographical comics with the exact opposite idea that, you know, when I met Emma, I wanted to record it and I wanted to write it down because I wanted to share it and I wanted to celebrate it, but I also wanted to capture it and be able to remember it, and also hopefully to help you remember Emma. Yeah. So for me, I have the exact opposite reason for that, is because it's special, then I want to preserve it and I want to put it down on paper. And the other thing that I think needs to be said is he was writing this for her while they were dating, and then they broke up partway through the creation. And so he didn't know when he started creating this book that it was going to end with the breakup. It was just, aww, as he was telling the story, they broke up. So he's like, well, I guess I have my ending now. And it kind of reframed the last part of the book, however far he got in the book, everything then.
So do you think that he wrote the book in chronological order? He didn't. It jumps around in time, I think.
It does definitely jump around in time. And that's what I kind of like that too, because that to me makes me, that's more of a pure memory. Memory is not linear. Memory is these moments that are all blended and crashing into each other and, you know, going backwards and forwards in time. And mm-hmm. the ending of the book, it ends with the breakup by phone, but then the last sequence is another phone call, but that's much earlier in the relationship, and they're all happy talking about, you think one day we'll get married, and she goes, yes, but we have to wait this long, and then you can marry me.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, how'd you feel about that ending of showing the breakup and then ending on a happier moment?
Yeah, I didn't mind that it jumped around like that, and yeah, I don't know how I feel about that, actually. I think because it had jumped around so much throughout the whole thing, I didn't mind it, and maybe it was nice that it ended on like one of the happier little vignettes. But I don't know if he had maybe deliberately peppered the book with kind of foreboding that it was going to end, because mm-hmm. you would have these happy little stories, but then you would have a story where he's being so clingy and so needy, and as you know, actually, even just, I think I didn't notice that as much the first time I read it, but reading it now, you know, as being a bit older and stuff, and just looking at it, you're like, there's no way that these two are going to end up together. The second time around, I was just like, oh my god, he's just so clingy, so needy. There, it's just like a very immature and like almost teenage relationship.
Totally.
And I wondered if he had like peppered the book with these little moments that mm-hmm. that you were like, oh god, no way would I even like put up with that.
I do wonder where the breakup happens in the writing, but mm-hmm. I mean, Emma, you and I have had this discussion before. Like, I've said to you, like, I don't know how any relationship lasts. Like, if you talk to anyone about a relationship and if they're venting at all, you're like, oh my gosh, like, it sounds like you guys are really incompatible. Like, anytime, so many times, like, friends have asked advice or like told me about the relationship, and I'm trying to be a sympathetic ear, and I've learned through error not to ever give an opinion. But there's just been so many times, like, I think if you, and I guess it depends on what you're focusing on and what the person's talking to you about. And, you know, if you're in the middle of a great relationship, you might not share that so much. And if you're in the middle of a bad relationship, it's all you want to talk about. But, you know, I think if you look at, you can pick apart any relationship and say, like, how do these two people stay together? And what's going to, why are they even dating?
Really? I don't agree. I think with this one, there's very clear signs that they're not going to last, and that they're quite, not incompatible, but that he's just far too needy and clingy, and she's just going to get sick to death of it eventually, and that's what happened.
I mean, also part of it too is we're only getting his side. So he's, mm-hmm. you know, one of my other favorite cartoonists, Seth, has done a lot of autobiographical stories. He's done less and less as his career goes on, but he says, you know, either you make yourself look too good, or then you try to make yourself look bad, and that's also kind of a weird way of making yourself look good. I don't know, Kale, did you feel like this was... there was a foreboding of this story, then did you feel like it was doomed from early on?
Yeah, I actually felt like it was, because exactly what Emma said. He is a bit clingy, and he's just like, just kind of pushy as well. And sometimes as well, you know, like with like his need for sex. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it just felt kind of uncomfortable at times.
Cringy.
Cringy, yeah, exactly. And maybe I've known some people like that in my life as well, who've been like that with their girlfriends, and so
I got better. Happily married, expecting a child.
But
no, you know, I mean, but that's what I love about this book. It's the happy moments that you're like, that reminds me of happy times with a relationship, but then it's also like, God, I've said stuff like that. Like, I know that I've been such a needy jerk or just too controlling, but it is hopefully an age thing. And hopefully it is that you do grow out of it, or you do what he does. You put it down on paper, and maybe he looks at it and goes like, wow, I see a pattern here of destructive behavior and self-sabotage that I hopefully, because he is happily married now, and he's got, I think, 2 kids. But the thing that makes me a little bit sad, and like that's another reason that I wrote that book, You're Stuck With Me Now, about our relationship. It isn't all just a fairy tale relationship. I do show some fights that we had and some doubts, and just I think very much if there is a conflict in that book, the conflict is like, how did two people who are independent figure out how to merge their lives and live together and have someone else in your space and deliver another human being. But
I don't know if we've actually figured that out.
It's an ongoing struggle. We had a discussion yesterday about the dishes and the kitchen. But the reason that I wrote that book is because to prove Kale wrong, that not all independent comics are about these horrible relationships falling apart and sad boys talking about exes. I wanted to put out a book there that does the same thing that Jeffrey Brown's book does. It is these moments, nice moments, but also some frustrations, but it is a happy story. You know, you know, most of us only are going to ever tell one happy love story in our lives, because all the others will end in heartbreak and disaster until you find the person that you end up with. So that's why I wanted to create that book about us, is because I wanted to put a book out there that shows, relationships are more realistic than you might see on TV, but there are good ones as well, and there are happy ones.
Exactly.
The
thing that, you know what he does that really annoys me,
Jeffrey Brown
not you he is so angry with her when she goes to have a cigarette, and then he makes her she says, oh well, I gave up smoking weed for you. And I mean, that to me is just like, he absolutely wants to change her, and that's just like, you know, just a big no-no. I think, you know, that would have been a big red flag for me in a relationship if he was just trying to change me, you know. But I not at that age, they shouldn't be trying to change each other that much. Like, maybe the, you know, person that you're going to end up marrying, you don't want them to be a mad weed smoker. But what was I going to say? I had something else to say about that. Oh, but then in his subsequent books, he becomes a heavy weed smoker.
Oh, you're right.
So I was like, he's such a hypocrite. So the first time when I read Clumsy, I hadn't read his other books, but I'd read the other book where he gets right into the weed and he absolutely loves it.
And he also, he has a lot of drinking problems in some of his books, because his Crohn's disease makes it difficult, and but he still drinks and makes himself even more sick. So in this book, he's pretty straight edge. He doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, doesn't partake in drugs. Yeah.
It just annoyed me.
I know, but Kale, did you relate to that at all?
The smoking part or the weed part?
just getting upset with a girl or another person for having different activity, or just... they don't agree, like, and it's what business? I don't know. I connected with that, of just getting upset with someone for doing something that they've done long before I came around, and I wouldn't choose to do it. I don't like it, but
that just annoys me, though. I think live and let live. Like, you're a person, you do that thing. I'm a person, I'll do what I want, and I'm not going to try and make you change unless, like, you know, if I suddenly took up smoking weed, now I'm pregnant with your child, you could probably tell me that that's not okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I might listen to you.
But I think that is something that comes with age, is you kind of realize, I don't know. I mean, when you're younger and you start dating someone, you build up all these expectations of the person before you actually start dating. And then when they don't meet those expectations, you get upset. One of the other moments that stuck out to me, like, he's asking her, like, or she asks, like, who would you have sex with? You could have sex with anyone. He goes, well, you. And she goes, no, you have to play this fantasy game. And he names someone. Then she names a female character from a comic book and gets really upset and insecure.
Yeah. And
whenever she doesn't fit into whatever view he has. And I think, I don't know, Kale, I mean, you could speak to this with long distance. Like, when you're spending so much time apart from someone, like, I don't know. Do you feel, Kale, that you kind of start to fill in the blanks a little more than if you were seeing them on a more regular basis? And then they kind of, they aren't the person, you're not missing or not imagining the real person?
I actually can't agree with that, yeah. You talk about certain things, but you don't talk about, you know, the day-to-day stuff as much. You know, I felt when you're doing long distance, it's like, you know, you talk about, you know, how perfect things are, you know, and how, you know, perfect that person is. But it's never like, it's never, we don't really talk about the, you know, like, you know, how do you do dishes, or like, why do you leave that, you know, leave that thing on the counter? Like, or, you know, you don't talk about the minute stuff as much. And when you notice that, you're like, hey, like, your place is really dirty. Like, you should like clean this up, you know, then you're like, oh shoot. If we move in together, how is it going to be? Like, is this person going to be like a complete slob? Or is this person going to, you know, annoy me, or, you know, like do stuff that bothers me all day? How am I going to deal with that? You know, and how does that eclipse all the good things about them? You know, those are things you kind of, yeah, you put it on the back burner a little bit when you're doing the long distance thing. But once you start, like, you know, living together and things start getting real, then you're like, oh, never mind. This is a little bit different than I imagined.
For sure. I mean, you know, people in long distance relationships, and I'm including myself in the past, like, you only see each other for like those highs, and you just want to make that time, the short time that you have together, as special. And like, you know, you'll go out of your way to like make it like the most exciting short time that you have, but that's unsustainable and that's not realistic. Like, life, it needs pauses and breaks, and then you don't get breaks from each other, and you don't, you know, get, there's no space suddenly. And like, it is so different, you know, even going on vacation with someone. Like, I know people who've like, oh, you know, we're fine, we've gone on trips together. And I was like, that's not life. Like, no. Going to Hawaii and staying in a hotel together for a week, that's not life. That's not going to give you a good idea if you can both share the same dishwasher. Like, that is not going to tell you what you need to know if this has legs.
Why do you have to bring up the dishwasher?
I just don't know why you can't. You are so focused on everything being so orderly and regimented, and then when it comes to the dishwasher,
I just don't
care. It's plates next to the pasta bowls, next to the tiny bowls, and then cups are upside down, and forks are mixed in with spoons. I just don't know why everything else has to be.
I don't know why everything else. I don't know why the dishwasher is the one thing that you do have to
maybe,
have orderly.
Maybe if we could start with the dishwasher, then if I know that I've got control over that, then I can take that sense of accomplishment and control and expand it in the rest of the house. Maybe that's what's the issue.
Okay.
But speaking of just this real life, like one of the scenes that I really liked in Clumsy is this kind of scene where he's visiting her and then he helps her do laundry because he's like overly excited to help her do laundry. And it's kind of idea of them playing house.
Yep.
When Emma and I first started dating, we would go grocery shopping together. And I was just so overjoyed and so happy to have someone to go grocery shopping with and do these mundane, boring tasks with.
Yeah, it was fun. I remember you saying to like your friend,
yeah,
we just did errands, but it was so fun.
Yeah. And now I hate it. No. Now I would much rather go to grocery shopping my own because I'm much more efficient and I can get it done quicker, and then we can do other activities. But also Emma loves going grocery shopping, especially if we're moving to a new place or visiting other places, Kale. She just likes to look at all the different foods, depending on which country we're in.
To see what's available.
But so that extends our time at the grocery store by a factor of 5-6 times.
Yeah, I like to read the packets and stuff.
Yeah, I know. So no longer is that our favorite activity.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry, digression.
But that's what this book is. This book is all digressions.
Yeah.
It is all digressions. This book is those little moments, you know, when they're spooning and she farts on them.
Yeah.
One other moment that I really liked, he's visiting her and her cat jumps up on his shoulders and she says, oh, he never does that to anyone but me. And he recognizes that this is a very good thing, that if her pet
likes him,
then that's a really good sign. I'm still working on Neo, our first cat, and trying to win him over.
Aw, he likes you.
He's put up with me more and more.
Yeah, he thinks you're okay.
Emma, did you notice that they mentioned Best Buy?
No, when did they mention Best Buy?
One of the times he's visiting her, they were going to go to Best Buy and then pick up a DVD, I think, or pick up a video.
No, I didn't even notice.
No? You usually, every time anyone says Best Buy, Emma...
I say Best Buy parking lot.
From the Serial podcast, Kale.
Oh, I had no idea.
I thought you would have gotten excited.
I didn't. Maybe that was one of the many things that was illegible. So I maybe didn't.
Did you find it illegible, Kale? Like I thought he did a good job, even though it is just written a ballpoint pen. I can tell instantly that he wrote the words first, then drew the balloons, and then drew the art. So like you don't get that problem that a lot of first time cartoonists have sometimes where they draw the balloon first or they draw the art first and they run out of space and the words are squished and squashed or kind of melting over the characters. But did you have any issues with legibility?
Yeah, sometimes when the lettering goes over, let's say, the frame or something like that, then I would have to kind of zoom in a little bit because I'm obviously reading it on digital, so it's kind of easy to do that. But I ran across some hurdles here and there.
Yeah, there's a good few words that I had to zoom in on and try to decipher as well.
Okay, the benefits of reading on Comixology. Yeah. One thing that I was going to say about some of his later stuff, this was kind of drawn, like I said, just in a sketchbook. So it was drawn much smaller than most comics. And then in the documentary, in the documentary Drawing Between the Lines, he talks about how he started drawing even smaller. And I think it's really hard to reproduce when it's drawn so small, because when you see his stories collected in anthology collections, I think it's not clear enough to blow up his tiny sketch pages to the size of a regular book. So they kind of reproduce 4 pages at a time, kind of like this multiple groups of 4 panels kind of for his layouts per page, just because I think it's hard to blow it up any bigger because you lose that clarity.
Yeah.
So he works really, really small. He's kind of, you know, most comics are drawn at kind of 1.5 times the size and they get shrunk down for reproduction, but he really kind of works very extreme in the opposite direction. Kale, as a filmmaker, I think about the perspective and the camera angle, and there's so many scenes. I don't know if you noticed this, Kale and Emma, but he kind of, you know, has the same perspective. He kind of locks the camera off. If this was a movie, it'd be kind of one long, unbroken shot, whether it's him lying in bed, talking to her on the phone with an overhead shot, or if it's the two of them sitting at a table in a diner. The camera doesn't change for many scenes. It's just kind of holds the moment and kind of stays there. I don't know if either of you noticed that. There's only a few times where he really kind of changes the perspective. The most dynamic scene is when they're playing foosball, where he, number one, he breaks the layout. Most of this book is 6 panels, 2x3 panels per page. on this foosball scene, he breaks the panels. He's got a middle grid where he's got like dramatic high angles and low angles. He's got this cross cutting between them. He's got sound effects going. It's really the most action packed scene. It really kind of jumped out at me. Did either of you notice anything about kind of the camera placement or the perspective choices?
I didn't actually notice that, but now that you're saying about each page being mostly the same, I feel like maybe that was a deliberate choice because he is just showing the mundane and the everyday, and so every day is kind of the same.
Yeah, it's a very, very basic grid. I mean, number one, that allows you to not have to think about crazy layouts, but number two, you know, looking at just the panel layout, you know, you wouldn't mistake this for one of Kale's Image comics from the 90s where there's crazy splash images and panels bleeding into each other. It is just very... very steady and deliberate.
I quite like that, and because I really don't look at the pictures for that long when I'm reading a comic. I know like you spend a really long time getting a picture just right when you draw it, and then I read it really quickly and then it kills you.
Yeah,
but like I really don't. I just want to know the story. I want to know what happened and a general like idea of what it looks like, and then I just move on. So I quite like that kind of simplistic layout.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way I read comics as well. Like I in my lessons, I always try to stress to kids, don't kill yourself. And I don't take that advice myself, especially with this new book I'm working on, because I am trying to push myself artistically. But when someone reads your book, they're not spending too much time. They are kind of taking it in. And I think that speaks to Kale's point earlier that, you know, the story kind of distracted him from the roughness and the crudeness of the art, because it is, you know, you are kind of getting swept up.
Yeah, the only bit is the legs, the hairy legs and the hairy... genital areas.
He's got a hairy belly that, too.
That distracted me a little bit from the story, but everything else, I didn't mind how rough it was.
Kale, anything else you want to say about the writing?
Yeah, I like the fact that it just captures little snippets of time and little snippets overall. And I mean, we mentioned this earlier during our discussion. And that's basically how sometimes you remember things as well. You know, like if you were to think back to a relationship, you don't think about, you know, the entire journey that you've taken with someone, but like you remember those little things that were super special to you. So I like the fact that he, you know, went with that kind of structure overall with the writing.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that invites a lot of our audience participation. We talk about this quite a bit, that, you know, I love how comics invite you to fill in part of the story. And by only showing you these kind of snippets, you know, you're left to imagine the rest of the relationship and everything in between these little moments and kind of string them together and figure out, you know, everything leading up to this one sequence and what happens in between sequences and what order they go in. And I like that it does require active reading. One last thing I want to say about the writing, which I kind of picked up when I was flipping through for sequences that I really liked, is in the start there's a few times where he has thought bubbles to go along with the speech balloons, and you kind of get an idea of what he's thinking, but that really goes away. He only does it a few times, and then for the bulk of the story it really is just speech balloons, whether it's him speaking out loud or her voice on the phone. And I just thought that was an interesting choice where he removes you a little bit from his inner thoughts, and you have to kind of interpret his emotions and you know, how he's feeling about the scene just based on what he says and how he looks. And I just thought that was an interesting choice that he, whether consciously or subconsciously, because he was kind of just doing this, you know, just writing it down without second guessing himself, but the thought bubbles disappear and you are kind of, you're still voyeuristically watching them and still involved in this relationship, but you're not inside his head as so literally. You're kind of having to interpret how he's feeling about everything that's going on. So Emma, the art, anything you want to say specifically about the art?
The art, obviously, it's like very raw. It's very, you know, almost rushed. And I did really think, I wonder why he draws himself in such an unflattering light, because when I draw myself, I try and make myself look much more fabulous than I really am.
I've also tried to evolve my drawing of you. You want more fabulous flowing hair.
Fabulousness, uh-huh. And like eyeliner and stuff, where you used to just draw little circles for my eyes, and I wanted longer eyelashes and stuff. And I think you draw yourself quite nicely. You know, it's like a simple style of drawing, but I still think you're you know, quite nice about yourself, but it's like he is almost going out of his way to make himself look uglier than he really is. I mean, I've seen a picture of the guy. He's not that hideous, you know. He's not as hideous as he makes himself look. And I just wonder, you know, does that like tell you a little bit about how he feels about himself? You know, does he have a really negative self-image? Like he just feels like a piece of crap, basically, because I feel like that's how he draws himself. Mm-hmm. Like just so hairy and unkempt and his stomach like flopping over everything. Like, so that it gives you this kind of like kind of feeling, you know, like when you see him going swimming and stuff, and when you see them having sex and how hairy he is, it's like a kind of a what's the word when you just have like a visceral reaction,
yeah
like you have to him. And you know, he draws her a bit more flatteringly apart from the pubic hair. He does make her look sort of half decent.
I mean, not to keep harping on Kale's love for 90s Image Comics, but he's not drawing her like very voluptuously. You know, she's...
Yeah, no, she's just normal.
Yeah.
But he's definitely like really unattractive the way he draws himself, I feel like. You know, I think so.
What is it that you find so unappealing?
The hairiness all over, and the big floppy belly he draws when they go... swimming,
yeah,
and just his hair, and just like his general like the line of his body. If you look, there was one there you just flick past when there's having sex, like even this, the line of his back there, it's just like wobbly. It's like how an old person's skin would look.
Yeah, I mean, it's always kind of a struggle to figure out how to draw yourself. I really tried to find a style that is a bit more simplistic, more cartoony, but that also hopefully invites you to, again, fill in those kind of details. And the more kind of generic a character design is, the more the audience does have to fill in those details and kind of, you know, fill in the shades to then kind of relate and
project
themselves. Yeah, thank you. Project more of themselves on. Kale, you're extremely lucky when drawing yourself, and for me, I've drawn you many times in my comics. I mean, a bald head just makes it instantly recognizable as a character trait. Very easy to spot you in one of my crowd scenes. But I'm looking at the page right now in Clumsy. It's on page 63. The sequence is called Hurt Me, and it's just this sequence of them talking to each other, and it's just this side view, this kind of profile shot of the two of them looking at each other for six panels. But it seems like he gets a little bit more detailed, and almost, again, it feels like he's taking his time a bit more by the time he gets to that sixth panel, and they're kind of slowly evolving on that page. And I like this. It reminds me of something I said when we were reading Blanket Scale, where there's a few panels there where he, in Blankets, Craig Thompson was drawing himself kind of rough and messy, but when it came to the girl, like he really slowed down and took his time, was a bit more precious with it. And that's why I feel looking at this page and Hurt Me, that as he continues, he does kind of slow down and take his time until he gets to that last panel. It is very simplistic and rough, but it just feels like he's spent a bit more time.
I think his face gets more expressive as that page goes on as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's another page when they're on the phone and she's saying she doesn't know if she can do this anymore. And by the last panel in that page, like your heart bleeds for him almost, like, and he's only really changing the line of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really capturing the emotion so well. So even though he's got such a rough art style, I really do think there's something so endearing about that art style, because it really does capture the emotions. Like, I really felt sorry for him in a lot of pages, and it's just the way his mouth is drawn.
No, I mean, I think it is very effective. Mm-hmm. The sparse amount of lines that he uses them very economically.
Yep.
Kale, did you find any other connections between this and Blankets, an earlier book we've done on the podcast?
Yeah, when I was reading this book, I was comparing it to Blankets because there are similar stories about, you know, heartbreak and, you know, the euphoria of a relationship. And they're also doing long distance in some parts of Blankets. But I found that the art in Blankets was much more detail oriented. It was beautiful to look at, compared to the very rough art in this book. And I mentally was kind of comparing both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, this felt a little bit more real than the kind of beautiful art in Blankets. Because in Blankets, I felt like it was just kind of like this, it felt like almost like a dream. Like it didn't feel real, you know, and I think he beautifully married his feelings and the art together. to make it look just, you know, gorgeous. And, you know, especially when he was, they were in the midst of their relationship. But here it just seemed, because it was so rough, it seemed a little bit more real, because it just kind of shows the kind of imperfection of just a relationship in general.
Yeah. So. I imagine what he's doing with Clumsy, and it's something like, the dream for me is that you get the ideas and you get the drawings and you get the writing down on the page as fast as the ideas come to you. And even, you know, what I would love to have is the ability to draw and write a comic, to create a comic page that it takes longer to read than it takes to create. Mm-hmm. And just Emma mentioned this, just like the proportion of how long it takes. Like, I spent the last year off and on, like, it was a very hard year to get any kind of creative momentum, but I was trying to chase those times that I had creative momentum. But I'm working on another graphic novel now about a past relationship as well, but also about my experiences in the 2011 earthquake in Japan. But after a year, I had about 80 pages of what I consider to be probably the first half of the book. It's all very rough. There's some finished art, but there's some sketches. There's some photo reference. There's some copied panels just to get the ideas and just get the flow out. But after spending a year working on this, the first person to ever read my work is always going to be Emma. So I gave her the book. A year of work. How fast did you read those pages?
It's about 15 minutes.
Was it that short? Okay. Maybe. Even shorter.
I don't know. Maybe about 15 minutes.
And
20 minutes.
Yeah. It's always going to be just insane the amount of time you spend. So, I mean, for Craig Thompson, the creator of Blankets, the amount of time that he spends to create these very dreamlike, as you said, Kale, these very luscious panels, and then for someone to flip through and read them because they're enjoying the story and you aren't slowing down so much.
You just want to get on with it and know what happens.
Yeah, and I think that's by design, and I think that's successful. Mm-hmm. If it is something that you are just kind of flipping pages through. But then Jeffrey Brown, you know, it might take you the same amount of time to read a story, the same number of pages, but he didn't spend nearly as long drawing them and thinking about them and agonizing over them.
And even like when it's dark, he just draws lines to show that it's nighttime. And I mean, it's so effective though.
I was going to ask, so you like that. So anytime it's nighttime, he just drew these there's no straight lines in the entire book, but they are as best as he can be horizontal, vertical lines.
I liked it. I thought, he's got the point across. This is nighttime.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Kale, what'd you think of those nighttime scenes?
Yeah, when I saw those lines, I thought it was raining. But then later on, I was like, oh, okay. I realized what it was. But at first I was like, why is it raining? And why are they just sitting on a car while it's raining?
Yeah, it definitely, it looked like rain at first. It's hard when you're only working in those two tones, black and white, and there's no grays because he's only using one pen and he's Xeroxing it and sharing it just through photocopies. You got to make gradients as best you can. And that's kind of the best solution he has for working in pure black and white, is these vertical horizontal lines kind of going through like prison bars almost.
Yeah.
To show darkness. Kale, anything else about the art that you want to mention that jumped out at you?
Well, when he was doing those scenes where they were in bed, several times I felt like, I guess his, again, going back to his art style, that it didn't feel like the perspective was correct. I think maybe I did a lot of art stuff when I was growing up, and a lot of classes and stuff like that. And perspective was one of those things that I kind of had to like really put a lot of effort into to learn. And when I saw his art, I was like, wow, the perspective isn't correct at all. Like, I would, you know, I would have drawn it completely differently.
Yeah. I think that's not crucial to him. I think he knows that that's not, if you're worrying about the perspective in that scene of them in bed, he's lost you already. So I think that's not, you know, number one priority for him. But I do like that the book starts with these kind of scenes of where the rest of the book's going to take place. Like, we see his bedroom, her bedroom, we see like one of the hotel rooms they visited, we see the camper they spent their first night together. And I think it's a clever way of kind of implanting the scenes, the setting in your mind before you read the story, because he doesn't do a lot of establishing shots. He doesn't really pull back the camera to show the locations as much as the story is continuing. So I think he kind of puts it all up front and then just kind of hopes that you remember enough of the basic kind of layouts of the room.
So we can focus more on their hairy, hairy bodies.
Yes. During the scenes. This, I don't think in this one he shows his butt, but in other stories you see his butt and his butt is just as hairy as he draws his legs. Yeah, if anyone doesn't have the book in front of them, like, he has just all these little lines for the hair, his body hair on his legs, and then also in other stories these little lines for his butt hair.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, page 94.
we'll share the best of his hairy legs on the social media. Kale, where can people follow us on social media?
You can follow us at Matt and Kale Read Comics on Instagram and Facebook, or Matt and Kale Read on Twitter. If you have any other ideas about books that we should read, you can always email us at mattandkalerc@gmail.com.
Emma, anything else you want to say about this book before we kind of wrap up?
I'm really glad that you introduced me to this book. You know, it opened up a whole new avenue for me. I did go on to read a lot more indie comics.
Blankets.
Yeah, I read Blankets. I read Fun Home.
Fun Home's amazing.
I haven't read one for a while.
You've been busy reading baby books.
That's true. Yes. That's true. But I did read a lot of indie comics after that. And I do think that it opened up a whole new genre and a whole new medium of reading materials to me. And I do, even though, you know, looking at it now, it does make me cringe. And I do see how whiny and needy he is and how the relationship was kind of doomed from the start. I still really liked it, and I still really felt like it was very endearing, and I just thought it was a sweet story of like a kind of young innocent guy and one of his first loves.
Yeah. Kale, do you think you're going to seek out the other books by Jeffrey Brown?
I think I'm just going to leave it here.
Okay.
I gotta be honest with you, I'm just not into his art style. Possibly the Vader and Son and Jedi Academy, if I come across it, but I'm keen to get back to my superhero books.
He has a really good one about cats.
He does have a few ones. Cats are weird, I think.
Yeah.
And they're just even smaller snippets of just cats doing weird things and funny things and made him laugh.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, if you are a fan of Jeffrey Brown's work, like we mentioned, the rest of his autobiographical stories, Unlikely, Any Easy Intimacy, or A-E-I-O-U, A Matter of Life and Death is really good, and that has really nice art, Kale. So if you like his Vader and Son art, A Matter of Life and Death, I think you might enjoy that. He's also got Funny Misshapen Body, that's talking about his medical issues that he's had, specifically with his Crohn's disease. But he's also, he's done quite a lot of cool things. Like he drew an animated music video for Death Cab for Cutie, the song Your Heart is an Empty Room. It's very much his characters kind of coming to life through animation.
He was in, his drawings were in that movie with, who's that girl?
Yeah, his Lizzie Kaplan, Alison Brie, and Martin Starr, and some other actors. The film Save the Date from 2012. He co-wrote that film, and it starts with...
She's a comic book artist in it, but it's his drawings, right?
It's his drawings at the start, and it was Lizzie Kaplan is the cartoonist, the artist, but he drew all of her art, but also the opening title credits have all the characters, so Martin Starr and Alison Brie drawn in Jeffrey Brown's style.
That's right. That was
It was a really great little romantic comedy. I really enjoyed it.
Me too.
Very much in exploring a lot of the sort of themes that he explores in his comics. But also, one last thing I want to mention before we wrap up, there's another book that he put out called Be a Man. Emma, have you read this one?
I don't know. I can't remember.
It's, Kale, I've never heard of anything like this. He created a spoof of his own comic. So Be a Man, in the opening of the book, if you open it up, he says, "A few months ago, I realized I was much too sensitive and pathetic and clumsy. So I wrote Be a Man and Fix Myself, creating the clumsy you all wanted to see." So it was kind of a response to the criticisms of people saying it's just this whiny thing. So he takes all these scenes from Clumsy and kind of flips them. So instead of being insecure when Teresa says she would sleep with the comic book character Tank Girl, the Jeffrey in Be a Man says, "Well, does she live nearby? Can we get her over here for some threesome action?" Instead of being really needy and clingy when she visits him, he says, "That's okay. I needed some time by myself after the 15 minutes I spent with you last night." And like at the end when they break up, he just cheers and says, "Woohoo, I'm free," instead of crying and being upset. One of my favorite scenes in Clumsy is it is sad and needy, but like he wants to keep talking to her on the phone, but she's trying to get off the phone because she wants to go watch Farscape. And he gets really upset and kind of sits and looks at the phone. Then he calls her back and says, "I'm really sorry. I just need to hear your voice more," pretty much. And she stays on the phone and says, "It's fine. It's fine." But in Be a Man, he's like, "Fine, go watch your nerd show." And he hangs up and he goes to the bathroom and like makes himself a sandwich. And then he calls her back just to like cuss her out at the end. It's this weird.
But that must have been a reaction to like the reactions he was getting from the book.
Yeah, exactly. It's he's hearing those criticisms and then he writes this very toxic masculine version of Clumsy and is like, "Fine, you think I'm too whiny. Well, here's a guy who's the exact opposite." But it is interesting, like, even in Be a Man, you can tell that he thinks, I don't know, it's hard. He betrays himself even in Be a Man. Like, he says this stuff like, "Haha, let's do it again, baby." And then, like, the character of Teresa just kind of looks at him and like he's an idiot. It's like, even when he's, like, trying to go so far in the opposite direction, you still know his actual agenda is, like, guys like this are worse than whiny guys. But it is just kind of crazy, a cartoonist creating this whole response to the criticism that he's gotten and making a spoof of his own work. Mm-hmm. But I really like Jeffrey Brown stuff. Like I said, this is the type of books that I like to seek out. I think I'm going to go and reread the other ones and kind of complete the trilogy again.
Yeah.
And maybe seek out even the later stuff that he's done, because I like spending time with this guy. I relate to him.
Your stuff reminds me of Jeffrey Brown a lot. You're not as whiny and emotionally immature, but your slice of life stuff reminds me of him.
Thank you. I mean, I very much take inspiration from him. And like I said, listeners, if you want to check out my stuff, if you like this sort of romantic autobiographical stories, please go to smithversussmith.com/store. The graphic novel, You're Stuck With Me Now, is the whole story of how we met Emma, our lovely guest from today. Thank you so much for being on the show. And also, we have another collection of stories about us. There's plenty of Emmas in the world. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really excited for you to actually listen to this episode.
That's what I was going to say. Thank you for having me. And I may actually listen to this episode just to see how it sounds.
Kale, I'm glad you enjoyed this. I'm glad that even if you're not going to seek out more of his work, I'm glad that you enjoyed it and you are open to trying different books and different genres of comics. This is kind of what the whole point of the podcast is, like, just kind of sharing and celebrating and showing just how many different books there are.
So Matt, what are we reading next?
Kale, in 2 weeks we are going to read one of my favorite comic book series of all time. It was a series that I read when I was really young, really helped to get me into superhero comics and just comics in general. It is Radioactive Man. So this was published by Bongo Comics in 1993 and 1994. Radioactive Man is Bart Simpson's favorite comic book character. He kind of exists in the world of the Simpsons TV show. And in the 90s, they made it into an actual comic book series. It's a 6-issue series. It's out of print now, but you know, you've got 2 weeks to kind of hunt down and find copies of these issues. What's really cool about these issues is they're very much about comics history and superhero history, and each issue jumps around in different time periods in comics. So the first issue is set in the 50s, the second one is from the 60s, the 70s, we got two from the 80s, and we end up in the 90s. I'm so excited because we're both big Simpsons fans, and I'm a huge fan of this series, so I'm really excited to hear what you have to say about this series, Kale.
Look out, Radioactive Man.
Exactly.